Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NoVam Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Appreciate it. I hope you're going to hang out with us for a while. We have a new affiliate we'd like to welcome, WVKO in Columbus, Ohio, 1580 AM. Welcome to all the listeners in Columbus who will be listening to us late at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. But I've heard that Columbus can be kind of a party town, so we look forward to gathering in liberals, Democrats, progressives, sane Americans, sensible people who live in the Columbus, Ohio area, who may find this program different, to say the least. So welcome to 1580 AM WVKO in Columbus, Ohio. A lot of stuff going on, huh? One of the top stories tonight, at least it made it to the NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, about 16 minutes into the program. Now keep in mind that most network news programs only have 22 minutes of news out of the 30 minutes allocated to tell you everything you need to know. So I guess it was probably the fifth story into the newscast. Brian Williams informed his audience, and as a matter of fact, even had video of all these old men jumping around on a stage in England as Brian Williams in the voiceover let people know that after 27 years, Led Zeppelin has reunited. Holy God! Page and Plant look like they should be doing commercials for the bed number thing, whatever, for Geritol. Do they still make Geritol? I don't even know. Page and Plant, there they were. The whole crew, John Bonham, all of them. I think Bonham was there. Everybody just, But the really weird part, somebody at NBC decided that this story was right up there with torture, lies, destruction of tapes, Malloy. Our Northeast Metro Atlanta military correspondent Sharon sent me an email this afternoon. Referencing something I said on the program last week, we heard that some CIA employees were willing to go to jail to make public the findings of the National Intelligence Estimate on Iran. Remember that? Because there's no way in hell that Bush or Cheney or any member of the Bush crime family would ever, A, be honest, B, be honest, or C, be competent. Maybe I have that backwards. A, be competent, B, be honest, or C, be... This gang is horrifying. We've established that, Your Honor. That has been stipulated. So how did the news get out? We spent some time last week trying to speculate on that, and we came to the conclusion that there is a resistance movement now inside the highest ranks of this murderous intelligence and inept intelligence community that we have. There are some people inside that intelligence community who are not politicized, who are not inept, who do believe in the gathering of information in order to formulate foreign policy. We also came to the conclusion that not everybody in the highest ranks of the United States military is a psychopathic Christian Armageddonist or some kind of a jerk who believes that just given a chance, he could be instrumental in bombing Iran back to Persia, back to what it was before it was Persia. There are some people, apparently, in the highest ranks of the U.S. military and the U.S. intelligence establishment who are saying no to the Bush crime family, finally. Sharon provides me with an email that says, why weren't the Democrats, such as Pelosi and Rockefeller, who knew George Bush was torturing people, why weren't they willing to go public? CIA employees were, to the extent that they were prohibited by law from going public. they would have risked jail. What the hell would Pelosi or Rockefeller or Graham, some of these other people, high-ranking Democrats, who apparently, and we'll get into this a little bit deeper here in a second, but apparently were briefed on the torture. Why didn't they, in the moment, say to the Bush crime family, hold on just a second. This is the United States of America. This is not the Spanish Inquisition. This is not Soviet Russia. This is not the Chinese. It's not Pol Pot. We are not a Mussolini's fascist. And we're damn sure don't belong to any faction within the Franco government. This is United States. We don't torture. We may destabilize and overthrow governments. We may assassinate foreign leaders or see that they're assassinated, but we don't torture. And nobody who was advised of U.S. policy in the Congress said a word. So Sharon asked the question herself. I asked myself, why did they cover for Bush? Why didn't they come forward with what they knew? Were they threatened in some way, or did they care only about their own careers, not their country, not the American people? Regarding Pelosi and Rockefeller, Sharon writes, what a gutless pair these two are. What cowards. I don't know what is more embarrassing right now, being a Democrat or being an American. They have betrayed us all. This is how the Bush administration, Sharon writes, gets away with their crimes. They make you an accessory to their crimes, and then bank on you keeping your mouth shut to save your own ass. Sharon. Yeah, I'm just becoming immunized to this stuff, Sharon. Every day it's something new. It was kind of fun, though, watching Nancy Pelosi toss a hand grenade with the pin pulled to her good friend Jane Harman, another representative from California. These two apparently are not very fond of each other. I have no idea why. I don't understand California politics because I live in the buckle of the Bible Belt. I live in Georgia, where it's just total insanity here. So I don't have the time or the inclination to figure out the largest congressional delegation in the Congress, and that would be California's. But I do know that Pelosi and Harman, for some reason, don't like each other. So Pelosi just, we'll get to that in a second, too, tossed it all to Sister Jane and said, well, no, it's her fault. Ain't me. Barry has three questions for Nancy Pelosi, assuming Barry could ask them of Nancy Pelosi, and he sends them to me in an email. One, what did you know? Two, when did you know it? Three, is impeachment off the table because of what you knew and when you knew it? Ooh, tough questions, Barry. What did you know and when did you know it? That expression is like point in time, at that point in time, or I have no recollection of that. All of this backwash from the Watergate investigation, and don't forget, Richard Nixon was never impeached. Don't forget, there was never any articles of impeachment were never brought against him. What did happen was the investigation, where everything started coming unraveling. The Senate Select Committee on Watergate. On and on and on that summer, if you remember, it just droned on back when it was 74? On and on and on. Until finally, Dick Nixon had to resign. But with this gang of Democrats, with this gang in control, using those phrases from Watergate is becoming very tiresome. Very tiresome. What did the president know and when did he know it? George Bush knew everything, and he knew it in a time frame that makes him a criminal. Next question. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
My job is a decision-making job, and as a result, I make a lot of decisions, and it's important for me to have an opportunity to speak to you and others who would be listening, explain why I have made some of the decisions I have made, the basis on which I have made decisions, to explain the philosophy behind some of the decisions I have made.
And to everybody who's emailing me, I know John Bonham is dead. I'm sorry. It's Monday. It was the first segment of the program. I thought I was making a joke. Never mind. In September 2002, four members of Congress met in secret for a first look at a unique CIA program designed to wring vital information from reticent terrorism suspects in U.S. custody. For more than an hour, this bipartisan group, which included current House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, this group was given a virtual tour of the CIA's overseas detention sites and the harsh techniques interrogators had devised to try to make their prisoners talk. Among the techniques described, said two officials present, was waterboarding, a practice that years later would be condemned as torture by Democrats and some Republicans on Capitol Hill. But on that day, no objections were raised. Instead, at least two of the four lawmakers in the room asked the CIA to push harder, two U.S. officials said. The U.S. official who witnessed the exchange said, quote, the briefer was specifically asked if the methods were tough enough, end quote. Lawmakers who held oversight roles during this period included Pelosi and Representative Jane Harman, Democrats of California, Bob Graham, Democrat of Florida, John D. Rockefeller IV, Democrat of West Virginia, Porter Goss, Republican of Florida, and Pat Roberts, Republican of Kansas. According to the Washington Post, in a rather lengthy article yesterday, individual lawmakers' recollections of those early briefings vary dramatically, but officials present during the meetings described the reaction of the lawmakers as mostly quiet acquiescence, if not outright support. Do them again! Do them longer and harder! One U.S. official present during those early briefings said there was no objecting, no hand-wringing. The attitude was, we don't care what you do to those guys as long as you get the information you need to protect the American people. And remember, that has been the sole function, the primary directive, if you will, of the Bush crime family, to protect the American people. Yes, indeed. And haven't they done a great job? Only after information about the practice of waterboarding began to leak in news accounts in 2005 did doubts about its legality among individual lawmakers evolve into widespread dissent. And the opposition reached a boiling point a couple of months ago when the Democratic lawmakers condemned the practice during Michael Mukasey's confirmation hearings for Attorney General. So, apparently, back in 2002, when Democrats and Republicans were briefed on the fact that the United States was now going to become openly, the American public was not to know about this, but the United States was going to involve itself in predetermined, pre-planned, and highly effective torture. And amazingly, According to the Washington Post, nobody knew that waterboarding was torture. Ah, but we beg to differ. Waterboarding as an interrogation technique and a torture has had its roots in some of history's worst totalitarian nations, from Nazi Germany and the Spanish Inquisition to North Korea and Iraq in the United States. The technique was first used 5 decades ago as a training tool to give U.S. troops a realistic sense of what they could expect if captured by the Soviet Union or the armies of Southeast Asia. The U.S. military has officially regarded the tactic as torture since the Spanish-American War. Let me see. 1898? Does that sound about right? The U.S. military has officially regarded waterboarding as torture since 1898. Ah! But these members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, had no idea. We didn't know it was torture. And Representative Graham said he has no memory of ever being told about waterboarding. He says, personally, I was unaware of it, so I couldn't object. Wah! What does Nancy Pelosi say? We'll share that with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Speakers, it'll be our secret. But that's how it goes. Millions of people living this
world. Maybe. 26 before the hour. We have a little segment coming up for you at some point in the program tonight. A new giggling killer. You know, we think of Bush as being the chief giggling killer because of this asinine little giggle that he attaches to, usually when he's saying something that normal human beings would find hideous or highly repellent, and Bush giggles. Well, we have a new one. Remember, we've suggested on this program that if you loved Bush, you're going to have orgasmic spasms over Rudy Giuliani. What a Nazi. He was on... Media Whore number one, Tim Russert's program, Meet the Press, on Sunday. And by a couple accounts, he broke into giggles and laughter at least 15 times when Tim Russert was asking him questions about Giuliani's fraud, deception, lies, misuse of public funds, misuse of his office, consorting with known criminals. And Giuliani's only response was to giggle. Chris Matthews on Hardball this afternoon on MSNBC mentioned the 15 number. We listened to that particular tape and, damn, could only find 12. But then Chris Matthews is Chris Matthews. But we're going to play a little bit of the sound from the new giggling killer a little bit later in the program. Now back to Pelosi and Jane Harman and the fact that at least four, probably more, members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, knew back in 2002 that the United States was now conducting torture against suspected detainees, no matter who those detainees were. And the hue and cry about the U.S. using torture reached a fever pitch this summer during the confirmation of Michael Mukasey, who Bush nominated to be the new head of the Department of Justice, the new Attorney General. And what we're finding out now is, once again, the Democratic Party that I used to love and respect, a party of which I'm still a member, damn it, And will always be. I've said that before. It's just that we have sick, degenerate leadership at the top of our party right now, which is better than the Republican. The Republican Party is sick from top to bottom and shot full of rat holes and ugliness and cockroaches running madly hither and yon. With the Democrats, it's just the top. It's easy enough to stop a fish from stinking or from rotting. You just cut off its head. So I think we can take care of the Democratic Party eventually. The Republicans are doomed, and, well, they should be. But here we have Pelosi, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's statement about what she knew about the treatment of detainees when she was informed about this in 2002 when she was on the House Intelligence Committee. Here's her statement, quote, "On one occasion, in the fall of 2002, I was briefed on interrogation techniques the administration was considering using in the future. The administration advised that legal counsel for both the CIA and the Department of Justice had concluded that the techniques were legal. I had no further briefings on the techniques. Several months later, my successor and ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, Jane Harman, was briefed more extensively and advised the techniques had in fact been employed. It was my understanding at that time that Congresswoman Harman filed a letter in early 2003 to the CIA to protest the use of such techniques, a protest with which I concurred." It wasn't me, it was Jane! It was that bitch Jane, not me! No! All of this thanks to tpmmuckraker.com. And the writer of this little bit, Spencer Ackerman, goes on. So a couple of things here. One, Pelosi isn't saying that she knew how detainees were interrogated. She's saying she was told that all techniques used in those interrogations were considered legal. So did she know what those techniques were and what they entailed? Eh? Two, never mind the brief mention of Jane Harman's protests there, that Harman sent a letter in 2003 to the CIA. Pelosi just threw Harman under the bus. It's no secret that the two Californians don't get along, but she didn't need to put the blame on her committee successor in her statement on this controversy. That's true, but then again, who knows what the genesis or the depth of this animosity between Harman and Pelosi, and frankly, who cares unless you happen to live in one of their districts, and even then, who cares? You know, people sometimes don't get along. And then on ABC News tonight, I don't know why this was such a scoop, but it was. It was notified way in advance by ABC News. ABC Today notified out on their mailing list that this interview was going to be on. It was with a guy named Jack Kuriakou, or John Kuriakou. He's now retired, and he was one of the witnesses too. The CIA torture techniques. As a matter of fact, John was. This is the first public comment by any CIA officer involved in handling high-value Al-Qaeda targets. And John Kuriakou, who's now retired, although he doesn't look to be more than about 35, but you know when you're involved in torture, you want to get out of it as quickly as you can. He said the technique was used on Abu Zubaydah, allegedly the head of Al-Qaeda's military committee. He was waterboarded, he was tortured, and he said the technique broke Zubaydah in less than 35 seconds. He told, Kuriakou told the interviewer, who did the interview on ABC? It was, what's his name? Damn it, I forget his, I'm drawing a blank here. He's going to be on ABC News Nightline tonight, so you might want to check it out. But the CIA, former CIA officer John Kuriakou said they waterboarded for Zubaydah for less than 35 seconds. And then he said the next day, quote, he told his interrogator that Allah had visited him in his cell during the night and told him to cooperate, end quote. Kuriakou said from that day on he answered every question. Oh, and the threat information he provided disrupted a number of attacks, maybe dozens of attacks. Aha, really? Now, you have to wonder about Kuriakou, don't you? And you make your own decision about this handsome young man when you watch the interview tonight on Nightline. There's several decisions that you might want to make about old John Kuriakou. I think he's one of those people. He speaks Arabic, and I think he's one of those people who was fired. He's retired, but I think he was one of the interrogators, one of the Arabic speakers who was fired for wholly inappropriate reasons, but he was fired nonetheless. You can make your own decision when you watch him on Nightline tonight. But you got to wonder, don't you, why all of a sudden the CIA provides or allows a former agent like John Kuriakou to go on network news and say, yeah, we waterboarded, we tortured, but you know what? You know what? The information we got disrupted dozens of attacks. Now, dozens means more than one dozen. So that'd be two dozen minimum, which is 24. Let's see, 2 times 12. By God, it is. 24 attacks were disrupted. Now, don't forget, what's his name? Sheikh Khalid, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was also waterboarded, also tortured, he confessed to everything, including the assassination of John Kennedy. Anything they wanted him to confess to, he confessed to. You're damn right. I don't want to go see Allah. No, 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 no. Stop with the torture already. I'll tell you anything you want. Which, apparently, Abu Zubaydah also said, according to Mr. Kuriakou. And you got to wonder about old John Kuriakou, the first official CIA person, former, present, future, to acknowledge the use of waterboarding on any detainee in CIA custody. Now, his account of Abu Zubaydah's intelligence value contradicts Ron Suskin's book that came out last year, The 1% Doctrine. That book reported that Abu Zubaydah was borderline retarded, didn't have more than minor tactical information about Al-Qaeda. Needless to say, and this is also at TPM Muckraker, needless to say, Kuriakou is also the first official to say unequivocally that Abu Zubaydah or any other detainee was tortured. So you got to wonder about this guy, Kuriakou. Sounds like somebody who does karaoke. Here he is, John Kuriakou. In the interview tonight on ABC, he said, you know, we're Americans and we're better than this and we shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. But, he says, the urgency in the wake of 9/11 led to a desire to do everything possible to get actionable intelligence. Kuriakou said in the interview, quote, what happens if we don't waterboard a person and we don't get that nugget of information and there's an attack? I would have trouble forgiving myself, end quote. Well, if you watch any of this interview tonight on Nightline, and I hope you do, I'll excuse you from the program. It comes on at 11:35 Eastern time, I think. So you can watch it. But for decades, psychiatrists have acknowledged the toll that torturing also takes on the torturer. So you watch young Master John Kuriakou tonight, and you decide.
Mama put my guns in the ground. I can't shoot them anymore.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. Michael writes, greetings, Mike. A few years ago, Jane Harmon was busted in a parking lot, caught giving secrets to AIPAC. I do not know how sensitive the material was, but it was hushed up. I think that is part of the Pelosi-Harmon rift. When Pelosi became speaker, she denied Harmon a sensitive position based on her little criminal enterprise. Regards, Michael. Really? I didn't know that. A couple emails here. Quickly, this is from Kate, who writes regarding Lindsey Graham. Actually, it wasn't Lindsey Graham, Kate. It was Bob Graham. but this works, too. Bob Graham didn't know, was unaware, BS. Hell, he probably has a library of torture tapes that he abuses himself to. I wonder if he has a couple of wetsuits and a pair of handcuffs in the cupboard. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. In the light squad, he belongs to me, a weaselly little effer. He was a joyful participant in the Clinton impeachment. No, that's Lindsey Graham. He was one of the House managers. All right, Kate. Guess what? I think you got the wrong Graham. It's probably my bad for not saying Bob Graham louder. She goes on, speaking of which, what do we tell the children? They shouldn't lie, but it's okay for the President of the United States to lie us into war and lie and lie and lie and lie. That oral artifice is going on in the Oval Office, in the People's House. He is setting a poor example for the children. Will no one think of the children? And whatever happened to rule of law, rule of law, rule of law. Repugnant weasels, all of them, Pelosi included. Yeah, rule of law. What was the rest of that from the Todd? What was his name?
Todd Browning.
Todd Browning movie. Freaks.
We are freaks. One of us.
One of us.
Google gobble. Google gobble.
One of us. Rule of law. Rule of law. Google gobble. I'll never forget that. Watching those people led by the now dead. Representative from Illinois, Henry Hyde, walking across the Capitol Rotunda like the freaks in Todd Browning's movie. Gobble gobble, rule of law, rule of law. Gobble gobble, rule of law, rule of law. Where's your rule of law now? Hey, Republicans. Doug in Boston writes, Mike, forgive me if I can't seem to focus on one issue bothering me this evening. At first, I thought the cover-up of a gang rape at Halliburton in Iraq would be enough. Then I thought the revelation that some Democrats knew we were waterboarding terrorist suspects and said nothing to stop it would be enough. A few hours passed, another story came up. This one states that apparently your favorite press secretary had no idea what the Cuban Missile Crisis was, and why should she? After all, she's only 35 years old and only the mouthpiece of, God, I hate saying this, the most powerful man in the world. I've written you before, Mike, and said I was tired. Well, I'm still tired and extremely pissed off at just about everyone in the political system, so allow me a request. I was wondering if you could tell me and your other listeners, is there anyone currently involved in our political system whom you truly respect? I guess I'm just looking for something or someone who actually could somehow rescue this country, either in 2008 or maybe 2012. Until then, another beam and ginger will have to suffice. Doug in Boston. Someone I truly respect in our political system. Well, yeah, of course, you know, there's always my fellow Ohioan, Dennis Kucinich. Who else? Is there anyone else, Kathy, that pops to mind immediately?
So far, I'm okay with John Edwards.
You're okay? Okay, well, Kathy says John Edwards. Let me see. I'm sure there are a couple more. I just can't think of them right now, Doug. Get back to me on that, will you? Or I'll get back to you. And the gang rape he's referring to is a Houston, Texas woman who's filed a civil lawsuit. Says she was gang raped by Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root co-workers in Baghdad. And that company and the U.S. government are covering up the incident. This is also reported by Brian Ross at ABC News. She is now 22 and says after she was raped by multiple men at a KBR camp in the Green Zone, the company put her under guard in a shipping container with a bed and warned her that if she left Iraq for medical treatment, she'd be out of a job. Miss Jones said, I didn't plan on working back in Iraq. There won't be a position here and there won't be a position in Houston. That's what she was told. In a lawsuit filed in federal court against Halliburton and KBR, Miss Jones says she was held in the shipping container for at least 24 hours without food or water by Kellogg Brown and Root, which posted armed security guards outside her door who would not let her leave. It felt like a prison, says Miss Jones, who told her story to ABC News as part of an upcoming 2020 investigation. I was upset. I curled up in a ball on the bed. I just could not believe what had happened. End quote. Finally, Jones says, she convinced a sympathetic guard to loan her a cell phone so she could call her father in Texas. Quote, I said, Dad, I've been raped. I don't know what to do. I'm in this container and I'm not able to leave. End quote. Her father called their congressman, Representative Ted Poe, Republican of Texas. Representative Poe told ABCNews.com, quote, we contacted the State Department first and told them of the urgency of rescuing an American citizen from her American employer. Poe says his office contacted the State Department, which quickly dispatched agents from the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad to Jones's camp, where they rescued her from the container. According to her lawsuit, Jones was raped by several attackers who first drugged her, then repeatedly raped and injured her both physically and emotionally. Jones told ABCNews.com that an examination by Army doctors showed she had been raped both vaginally and anally, but that the rape kit disappeared after it was handed over to KBR security officers. A spokesperson for the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security told ABC News he could not comment on the matter. Yeah, it's been another weird news day, hasn't it, Truthsayers? Stick around. Second hour coming up with the Giggling Killer 2. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. Got an email here. I'm sorry I don't have the person who sent it, but thank you. Regarding Jane Harman's ties to AIPAC, the American-Israel Political Action Committee, I guess they have a different, they call it the Public Affairs Committee, but oh, you're right. This is from the Washington Post. Back in October a year ago, 06, federal law enforcement sources confirmed today that the FBI opened an investigation in 2005 into whether Jane Harman improperly enlisted the aid of a pro-Israel lobbying group. However, they cautioned that no evidence of wrongdoing has been found. The inquiry focused on whether Harman had made promises to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee in exchange for its support of her desire to become chairman of the House Intelligence Committee if Democrats take control of the House. Although the case is still considered open, officials said the allegations have not been substantiated and there has been no significant investigative activity on the issue in recent months. Harman, who has hired prominent Republican lawyer Ted Olson, a former Solicitor General, told Time magazine that the allegations were, quote, irresponsible, laughable, and scurrilous, end quote. The Harman inquiry was an outgrowth of the ongoing criminal prosecution of two former AIPAC lobbyists who are charged with violating the Espionage Act in connection with receiving national defense information and transmitting it to journalist employees of the Israeli embassy who were not entitled to receive it. Yada, 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 yada. So that's apparently what the story is about. Jane Harman and her connection to AIPAC, and why Pelosi and Sister Jane are having some difficulties. The cover-up of this gang rape of the woman by Kellogg Brown Root Halliburton employees. Why do you suppose that the there's a little bit more here that you should know. It's now been 2 years, and the U.S. Justice Department has brought no criminal charges in this matter. In fact, ABC News could not confirm any federal agency was investigating the case. Legal experts say Ms. Jones' alleged assailants will likely never face a judge and jury due to an enormous loophole that has effectively left contractors in Iraq beyond the reach of United States law. Congressman Poe, the Republican from Texas who this young woman's father first contacted, Congressman Poe says neither the Departments of State nor Justice will give him answers on the status of the Jones investigation. Since no criminal charges have been filed, that's the reason this young woman is trying the approach that Jones is now trying, a civil case. However, as ABC reports, Jones's former employer, that would be Kellogg Brown and Root, Halliburton, doesn't want this case to see the inside of a civil courtroom. So KBR has moved for Jones's claim to be heard in private arbitration instead of a public courtroom. You see, in arbitration, there's no public record, there's no transcript of the proceedings, meaning that Jones's claims could not be heard before a judge and jury. Rather, a private arbitrator hired by the corporation, hired by Halliburton, Kellogg Brown and Root, will decide Jones's case. In recent testimony before Congress, employment lawyer Kathy Monsey said that Halliburton won more than 80% of arbitration proceedings brought against it. In her lawsuit, Ms. Jones's lawyer says Kellogg Brown and Root and Halliburton created a, quote, boys will be boys, end quote, atmosphere at the company barracks in Iraq, which put her and other female employees at great risk. The lawyer said, quote, I think that men who are there believe that they live without laws. The last thing she should have expected was for her own people to turn on her, end quote. Halliburton says it is improperly named in the suit because, you know, wow, it's already divested itself of KBR. We don't have anything to do with it. Since the attacks, Ms. Jones has started a nonprofit foundation which is dedicated to helping victims who were raped or sexually assaulted overseas while working for government contractors or other corporations. Ms. Jones said, quote, I want other women to know that it's not their fault. They can go against corporations that have treated them this way. End quote. And this is just a vile, vile story. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But how do you suppose this story was deep-sixed? How do you suppose that after 2 years, nothing has been done by either the State Department or the Justice Department? One word, Dick Cheney. Obviously, come on. Dick Cheney, this murderous son of a bitch who sits in the office of the vice president, all he has to do, Kellogg Brown and Root?
Well, that's my old company, and Halliburton. No, there won't be any investigation, no testimony, no nothing. Now, excuse me, I have to go have another heart attack, or not. But in the meantime, no. No investigation. Stop it now. Do you hear me? Now. Right now. Stop it. Stop everything. Whoever this broad is, look, she shouldn't be in Iraq. That's a man's game. It's a man's world. Now. Leave me alone. I have doves to kill. I have an attorney whose face needs to be shot off. God.
Giuliani. Oh, wait, before we get to that, since Giuliani's a Catholic and evokes the Catholic Church in one of his responses here to Media Whore number one, Tim Russert, yesterday, there's kind of a tie-in here, a segue for devout Catholics. Somebody sent this to me last week when we were talking about how the Catholics got rid of purgatory. Well, they didn't get rid of purgatory, but they got rid of limbo. And I was just wondering what happened to all those millions upon millions of little baby souls that had been condemned to limbo because there had been no priest to turn them into good little Christian children, good little Catholic Christian children before they died. And some wag emailed me and said they were sold off to a Hindu priest who recycled them, but the souls. But here's another answer. You see, the Pope, the Nazi Pope, has offered a shortcut through purgatory. That's right.
It says here, for devout Catholics fearful of a long stint in purgatory, that vast metaphysical holding pen where the faithful believe they will go to be purified prior to the admittance to heaven, the Pope has some encouraging news this week. There's an easier way. Pope Benedict XVI has decreed that Catholics can cut short their future purgatory stays by visiting a holy shrine in Lourdes, France, a site where believers say the Virgin Mary appeared to a shepherdess in 1858. Catholic pilgrims who visit Lourdes from now through next year, it's like a one-day sale at Macy's, right? Catholics who visit Lourdes from now through next year, which will mark the 105th anniversary of the miracle claim, will receive an indulgence from the Pope, which he says will speed the trip to heaven. And some of you people wonder why I look at this as bat squat. Are you serious? Ah! New York Times' Mike Nitzer writes, quote, the door for indulgences is not always open, though, and for years after the Vatican Council reforms of the 1960s, they were rarely offered until 2000 when Pope John Paul II started using them, indulgences, to attract pilgrims to World Youth Day. The pilgrimage, which must be made in the next year to Lourdes, can be accomplished using Vatican charter flights that begin over the summer. Joe, wonder how much they cost. My God. For Catholics not in a position to jaunt off to France, prayer at other select sites during a 10-day span in February may also do the trick. According to the BBC, the Pope indicated that, quote, believers who prayed at places of worship dedicated to Our Lady of Lourdes from 2 to 11 February next year, or who were unable to make the journey, would also be able to receive indulgences, end quote. Oh, look, let's do a break real quick while I go vomit. Oh! I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Yeah, I know. I've pissed off all the Catholics now. Hey, look, it's your religion, folks. If you want to be crazy, be crazy!
Cuts matter. You see, when somebody builds a new building, somebody's got to come and build the building. And when the building expanded, it prevented additional opportunities for people to work. New opportunity employments.
I'm a monkey!
Shut up.
I'm a monkey!
Regarding the indulgences being sold by the Catholic Church, once again, I mean, you know, the Martin Luther tried to get it stopped back in the 16th century, and he was so pissed off he founded Protestantism. You know, I'm talking about Martin Luther. You know, Martin Luther, the one who said all the homes of the Jews should be burned to the ground, that the great Protestant reformer. Yes?
Well, as that chick on The View would say, well, was he here before the Christians?
Martin Luther, the one that said the Jews' homes should be destroyed, their synagogues burned, their money confiscated, their liberty curtailed. And, of course, that was such a popular thing to say that when the Nazis rose to power in the 30s, the 20s and 30s, of course, they resuscitated old Martin Luther. And you people wonder why I'm an atheist. You've got to be kidding. You've got to be kidding me! Anyway, the Pope is the Nazi Pope, which is very fitting. The Nazi Pope is trying to restore, or has restored, since he is infallible, has restored indulgences. So if you want a quick way out of purgatory after your ass dies and you're being attacked by snakes, scorpions, and spiders as you're being purged so you can enter into the kingdom of heaven, just remember, you can cut short God's will by simply going to France and, I don't know, drinking out of the fountain. What do you do when you go there? Do you go up to the fountain of the Lady of Lourdes and go, hamana, hamana, hamana? I have no idea. And I really don't want to know.
Don't ask me. I'm the one that when you forced me to take communion, I told the priest thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, you did, didn't you? Alice in Arkansas wrote something here regarding these tired old phrases. When did the president know it? What did he know? When did he know it? At that point in time, I have no recollection of that. You know, all this crap garbage that's spewed out of the mouths of these Republican co-conspirators at both the Watergate hearings and the Iran-Contra hearings. This is what Alice writes. What did I know? And when did I know it? I knew that the United States, and she says, I won't say of America, because we're not the only part of America. There's North America, South America, Latin America, and well, I digress. I knew that the United States I had been taught about when growing up in the 50s did not exist. When did I know it? When Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon. Message reinforced when Poppy Bush pardoned Caspar Weinberger and Elliot Abrams and the other Iran-Contra felons. And reinforced again when the man from Hope didn't pursue any of the Iran-Contra stuff, thinking he'd let the aristocracy know that he could play like one of them, and they would then accept him. Poor little boy from the wrong side of the tracks, always needing his betters' approval and adoration, acceptance. I think Hillary's going to be a good president. I really do. Alice goes on, those weird beings spinning around inside the Beltway make me dizzy. I can barely stand to watch and listen to them, but I seem driven to keep watching. It feels like the 70s and the Nixon years, the outrage and anger, the obsession with watching it all, the insanity of it all, and then the elation when Nixon resigned. We rejoiced, we celebrated, and then Ford pardoned him. The end. Over and out. Alice in Arkansas. Yeah. My goodness. All right. Rudy Giuliani. We just give you a little tease here. Can we tease this one? We got time to do this one? We don't have time to do just one. All right. Yeah, I think we do. We have time to do a short one. Here we go. Here's Giggling Killer 2, Rudy, happy man, couldn't stop laughing his way through this interview with Russert on Sunday. First question, Russert says, MSNBC has done some polling. The Republicans, here they are, Iowa, Huckabee 32, Romney 20, Thompson 11, McCain 7, Giuliani 5. Fifth place is, all right, wait, okay, now we don't have time. I'm sorry. We'll do it when we come back. Is that right? MSNBC. Huckabee. Yeah, Huckabee is. Apparently, Huckabee satisfies a huge gaping hole, or fills a huge gaping hole inside the hearts of all Christian Americans, which is pretty much the majority of people in this country when you count the Catholics and the Protestants and all the anti Semites that make up the Catholics and the Protestants. So Huckabee appears to be the guy who's going to get the golden ring. You think it's going to be Huckabee? It's damn sure not going to be McCain. It's damn sure not going to be the cult member Mitt Romney. It's damn sure not going to be this avuncular old fart who belongs back on television, Fred. Fred Thompson. As far as Giuliani, I got news for you, Rudy. Your game just doesn't play in evangelical circles or the South or Republican circles, unless it's the Bush crime family. It doesn't play with Pat Robertson. Oh, wait a minute. He endorsed you, didn't he? Yeah, oh, God. Anyway, so it looks like Huckabee is going to be the nominee. Things could be worse than Huckabee. How much worse? Not much. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm so carefree with a joyless heart I have. Then sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. Then you finally see my other side. Hey, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Make 'em laugh, Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one, they'll be standing in line for those old honky-tonk lungs to shine. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Yes,
don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy laugh, do it for you laugh, on Nova laugh, M Radio.
Make them laugh.
All right, 26 before the hour. Here we have Rudy the Laughing Man. Giuliani, kind of like the Smoking Man on that program. All right, media whore number one, Tim Russert on Meet the Press yesterday started giving some hard facts to Mafia Boy. And that was the polling that MSNBC had done in Iowa. And the standings were Huckabee 32, Romney, I guess these are percentages, Huckabee 32, Romney 20, Thompson 11, McCain 7, Giuliani 5. So media whore number one, Tim Russert, says fifth place. Is that a problem?
I wish he had shown Florida. it would have looked better when we have an 18-point lead. there are some polls we're behind. Somewhere we're ahead.
But in fifth place in Iowa, would it be better for you if Huckabee beat Romney in Iowa? Wouldn't that be helpful?
The best thing is if you win. That's the very best thing.
But
who knows?
And they talk about Hillary Clinton's laugh? Oh, please. More happy talk, this time about the National Intelligence Estimate on Iran. Media whore number one, Tim Russert, says, I want to ask you some questions about that because it's received a lot of discussion over the past few weeks, particularly your involvement with the country of Qatar. Salon.com asks you this question. Mr. Giuliani, are you aware that the Interior Minister appointed in 2001 and reappointed this year by the Emir of Qatar is Abdullah Al Thani, the former Minister of Islamic Affairs and a strict Wahhabi Muslim who has been identified in U.S. press and government reports as a protector of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Why would you do business with people who helped Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I mean, the reality is that Qatar is an ally of the United States. There are a significant number of American troops that are stationed in Qatar. What we did for them and do for them is security for their facilities.
Robert Baer, a CIA officer who had tracked Mohammed Khalid, said that you are taking money from the same accounts that protected Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who then went on to mastermind September 11th.
That's just totally wrong.
Didn't laugh there, did you, Mafia Boy, huh? Didn't laugh there. No, it's not totally wrong. You'll do business with Satan's sick stepfather if there's enough money. You evil son of a bitch, you. Any sentence that Rudy Giuliani uses has a noun, a verb, and 9/11 in it. Who said that? Joe Biden said that?
If 9/11 and Rudy's business ties to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is such a hoot, then his relationship with Hugo Chavez and Kim Jong Crazy of North Korea are positively hysterical. Media whore number one, Tim Russert, says, people are calling into question your judgment. They also cite that your law firm
did work for Hugo Chavez, the head of Venezuela. They've now quit that, but they did represent Citgo, which is run by Hugo Chavez.
That's a stretch.
It's not.
No.
And one more, and I'm going to give you a chance on this. One more, a Las Vegas developer that you worked with, who had a close partnership with Hong Kong billionaire, who was close to Kim Jong-il. These are all accusations being made in a very serious way about your business.
The law firm never represented Hugo Chavez. They represented, they represented an American company, Citgo in Texas, that employs maybe 100,000 people, 120,000 people, that sells gasoline, needs to comply with the law.
and I was willing to take over. You know, let's forget the Kim Jong crazy part.
The Bernie Kerik scandal is a real knee slapper, too. Huh, Mafia Boy?
Media whore number one, Tim Russert, asked the following question of Mafia Boy. Another issue where your judgment has been questioned, Bernard Kerik, your police commissioner. Here's how the Daily News reported it. Bernard Kerik lied, schemed, and sold out the city, all under the nose of his mentor and pal, presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani. That is the stark portrait painted in the 16-count indictment unsealed in federal court. The indictment charges Kerik with conspiracy, tax fraud, making false statements, end quote.
So, according to Mr. Kurianski, involved in the city investigative unit, he briefed you about Bernard Kerik before you appointed him police commissioner, Mr. Giuliani, and there are documents that demonstrate this. Do you recall the warning you were given about Mr. Kerik? He said he briefed you.
No, what he said is, when he looked, first of all, he said he didn't remember it. That was his first recollection. Wait, this is important. We get it right. He first said that he didn't remember briefing me. Then when he saw his notes, the note that I just described, he said, I must have, because I have these notes here. We talked about it.
Yeah.
He thinks he must have because of the notes there.
Yeah.
I don't remember him doing it. As one of my predecessors, Phil Oligardi, used to say, I don't make many mistakes, but when I make them, they're big ones.
You know, if I ever accidentally drop a bomb on Tel Aviv, I'm just going to laugh my ass off. Now, that would really be a mistake, wouldn't it, Tim, huh? Oh, my God. This guy wants to be president? So what else is funny? How about his adultery? Media horn number one, Tim Russert, says... Also, question, criticisms about your security details for your then-girlfriend, Judy Nathan. This headline in the Daily News, now with new questions over security details for Rudy's girlfriend, driving Miss Judy. Bernard Kerik had said that there had been no police protecting Miss Nathan until December 2000. Now your folks have told the Daily News that, in fact, there was some security before that date. Why was it appropriate for you, Mr. Giuliani, to give taxpayer-funded security to your girlfriend?
It all has to do with me. All of this came about because of me, and all of it came about because of the work that I did. I've had security on and off for over 20 years. It's not something I ask for. It's not something you particularly want. It's not something she would want. This comes about because of threats.
Threats!
And people threaten to kill you. People threaten to harm you. Every single thing done here was done based upon the assessment of someone else that this was necessary. They made the choice. My wife, Judith, honestly, would prefer not to have to have security.
This comes because of threats, and people threaten to kill you. People threaten to harm you. Most of them are my ex-wives. So, of course, my girlfriend needs protection. What's the matter with you, Tim? How funny is the debate on gay rights? Let's find out. Media horn number one, Tim Russert of NBC's Meet the Press, asked Rudy Giuliani, mafia boy. Mr. Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, leading the field in Iowa, told the Associated Press back in the 90s that AIDS patients should be quarantined and that homosexuality was aberrant, unnatural, and a sinful lifestyle. What's your reaction?
Look, I got enough of my own statements and issues, as we've seen, that I have to deal with. I think Mike has to.
But you don't believe that homosexuality is aberrant?
Oh, no.
Natural or sinful?
No, I don't believe it's sinful. My moral views on this come from the Catholic Church, and I believe that homosexuality, heterosexuality, as a way that somebody leads their life isn't sinful. It's the acts. It's the various acts that people perform that are sinful, not the orientation that they have.
Various acts, like, I don't know, let me pick one. Adultery! Is that sinful, huh, Rudy? Let me see here, real quick. Here it is in the Ten Commandments. I'll be damned. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Hold on, Rudy. Here it is in the Old Testament. Let's see, Leviticus chapter something, verse something. And if he commits adultery, he shall go out and have his thing cut off. What do you think, Rudy? Huh? Homosexuality, my ass, so to speak. How about heterosexual adultery? Oh, but that's right. The Nazi Pope says you can have indulgences. Here's what you have to do, Rudy.
hop on a plane.
Vatican Airways. I'm sure you could get a discount there, bro. Hop on a plane, go to France, pick up a car, drive to Lourdes, go to that thing up there where the fountain and the water, and get down on your knees or whatever it is you're supposed to do and pray real hard, Rudy, and you'll get out of
purgatory
quicker than if you don't. All that adultery you've been doing, pish tush, don't worry about it. The Nazi Pope says you're home free.
But as far as those queers are concerned, oh no. There ain't no Vatican Airways flight to anywhere that's going to save them. Right, Rudy? The Laughing Man. Rudy, Mafia Boy, Giuliani, the Joker.
The best years have come and gone, you took me by surprise.
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Congress wants answers on the CIA tapes, why they were destroyed. Ooh. Oh, sure. You'll get them. Yeah, just... wait around long enough, you'll get your answers, I'm sure. On the videotapes, all you have to do, if you really want them, just go to Dick Cheney's tape library and Gonzalez's tape library, and there they are. Hey, you know, it's right in the porn section. There's nothing to say about the Colorado shootings. I feel sorry for the families of the people who were gunned down. But the guy believed to have killed all four at the mega church in the missionary training school had been thrown out of the missionary training school about 3 years ago, and in the meantime been sending the place hate mail. Anybody with the sense their God gave a bag of gently stewed rhubarb stalks could have figured out this guy was a threat and put him under some kind of, got him some help or something, but no. So four people are dead, five, including the shooter. Five more wounded. It's just astonishing to me. Do we ever get a week or a month goes by without some freak going out of his gourd and for whatever reason and murdering numbers of other people before the freak usually, and I'm sorry, I know these people have serious problems. It has to be serious, you know, when you're young and white and male, and you decide you're going to kill everybody that you can possibly kill because you're pissed off or you're tired of living or you're depressed or you're on antipsychotics or, you know, whatever it is. But it just doesn't stop, right? It just doesn't stop. The shooter, Matthew Murray, lived at the Rocky Mountain. That's where his dad. His father is a neurologist, chief executive of the Rocky Mountain Multiple Sclerosis Center in Englewood, Colorado. But the shooter lived with his brother. His brother is a student at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa. The brothers were homeschooled, according to neighbors. They described the whole family as, quote, very, very religious, end quote. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. What?
That, see, you know, how long has it been since you've heard of an atheist who picks up a gun and decides to go kill people? Oh, I don't know, because, you know, I probably shouldn't say that. But in so many instances, it's somebody who, here lately, it's been people who you can suppose are not atheists. And the killer was killed himself by an armed guard at the megachurch. Was it at the megachurch or was it the student? I don't even know. But it just, I don't know. It makes me wonder. Somebody is armed, and it's a female security guard at this megachurch, and she was armed, and she, you know, put a few into the killer, the 24-year-old, so he's dead. I just don't I don't want anything to do with anybody's religion. I really don't, and I hope that the believers will just stay the hell away from me, okay? Because you people who do subscribe to some of these profoundly disturbing religions are, as far as I'm concerned, profoundly disturbed, and I just don't want to be around you when you snap. Because I know it'll happen. You know, you'll kill as many people as you can, and then your last breath, you'll say something like, "He that confesseth before my Father, him will I confess before my Father." He that confesseth, whatever it was. The gig is, you can be just a hateful son of a bitch, and right before you die, if you say, "Forgive me, Father, I've sinned," you're home free. Well, not quite free. There's always purgatory. Well, not quite purgatory, because there's always indulgences. And Michael Vick, 23 months in prison for running a cruel and inhumane dogfighting ring and lying about it. He could have gotten 5 years. The U.S. district judge who sentenced him said, "You need to apologize to the millions of young people who looked up to you." Michael Vick answered, "Yes, sir." The former Falcons quarterback said, quote, "I'm willing to deal with the consequences and accept responsibility for my actions," end quote. And as I wrote in my little mini blog today at MikeMalloy.com, I don't condone anything Michael Vick did. I've had pets all my life. I have a cat now. I love animals. I can barely take my child to a so-called natural habitat zoo here in Atlanta because I hate to see what kind of condition animals live in. In these, even in the humane zoos, I live in a city where some indulgent rich son of a bitch keeps buying whale sharks and great big fish and putting them in a tank here so people can come and go, "Ooh, look," and then the animals die. You know, I can't stand that. But 2 years in prison, when compared to, say, oh, I don't know, pick a name, George Bush, Dick Cheney, the rest of these bastards who are responsible for mega death of real, actual, live humans. And God knows how many. You know, how many dogs do you suppose have been blown into dog mist in Iraq as a result of our use of white phosphorus and cluster bombs and on and on and on and on? Well, anyway, Michael Vick, and you're not going to like what I'm about to say, but, you know, I've been around for 20 years when crack cocaine and powder cocaine were considered two different things, and the fact that black folk for the most part used crack and white folk for the most part used powder, and it was the same damn stuff, and yet black folk got the long prison sentence, the big long prison sentence, and now they got Barry Bonds, and now they got Michael Vick. And I just sometimes wonder if anybody who exists within Caucasian genetic pool ever has the same thought that I do, that maybe, just possibly, just maybe, black folk are right, and that the white power structure will do anything it can to nail a black man. I don't know. Sometimes I just sit around and wonder about that, you know? I kick back and I have a Jack Daniels and Coke and I just wonder. Hello.
like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a horn, like a knife from an old-fashioned book.
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Again, we'd like to welcome WVKO 1580 AM in Columbus, Ohio, newest affiliate of the Nova M Radio Network, where it concerns this program. Hope we can make contact. Although the our program will be delayed in the Columbus area, we'll be on from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. But hey, there's still 5 or 6 people awake in Columbus from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m., and by God, we will have them listening to this program. So welcome to WVKO, and thanks for taking us on. Let's see, one more thing here, and then we're off to the races with your phone calls. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. There are 2 open lines if you want to get in here. At White House press briefing back in October, a reporter asked too much Cappuccino Perino about Vladimir Putin's suggestion that a U.S. plan to base parts of a missile shield in Europe was similar to the events that led to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Perino responded, "Well, I think that the historical comparison is not, does not exactly work. What can I say? What I can say is that President Putin went on to say, which is that the President and President Putin have said that we can work together on this." When a second reporter asked whether Putin's comparison to the Cuban Missile Crisis had been helpful, Perino said, "I think that, look, the president said that we have a good but complicated and complex relationship with Russia, and the president has a relationship with President Putin, one that he treats him with a lot of respect, and because of that, he's able to say frank and dishonest discussions with him, and I think the relationship in a variety of ways, we work well together on many different issues." If that sounds like Perino was buying time or talking around the question, well, that's because she was. Over this past weekend, Lava Lips appeared on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And she said she panicked when she got the Cuban Missile Crisis question because she didn't know what the Cuban Missile Crisis was. She said on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, quote, "I really don't know anything about the Cuban Missile Crisis. It had to do with Cuban missiles, I'm pretty sure." So it's a joke. The one incident in the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, way back before Dana was born in 1962, the one incident that almost sparked a thermonuclear exchange that would have wiped out pretty much all living creatures on Earth, with the exception of silverfish and cockroaches. And Dana Perino, whom the Bush crime family has labeled knowledgeable, experienced, the perfect front person for this corrupt, filthy administration, doesn't know what the Cuban Missile Crisis was. It just never stops, does it, truth seekers? Huh? Let's go to your phone call, starting with Carl, who is calling from Columbus, Ohio. Carl, yes. Welcome. You must be listening via the internet right now.
Yes, it is the internet, but to be honest, I've been more or less listening since you hit Air America. And, you know, so I've experienced your away time and your return time. And it really only came over as sort of the local group, which is it's basically Yahoo, but one of the groups involved is called Ohio Majority Radio. Uh-huh. And, you know, so as you may have heard, the radio station is a real startup. It's in its second week.
Oh, right, really? No, I didn't know that. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And things are literally changing by the day. It was only a day or so ago that they also added Hartman. And it's like, this warms my heart. Okay. And it's like, as I said to your screener, you personally, to me, you're the dulcet voice of truth. So, you know,
dulcet?
You know,
the dulcet?
Oh, now you stop.
The dulcet voice? A screaming...
I like truth, man. What can I say?
I have
a fetish for truth. What can I say?
Well, that's good, but if there's one thing... That I don't think I am, Carl. I don't think my voice is dulcet. Although tonight I've been kind of calm. You know, I'm more of a hysteric. You know, just out of control hysteric. And to all the right wing bloggers who listen to this program, trying to catch just one little thing they can put out there, Malloy calls himself a hysteric. That's absolutely true.
Two questions. Number one is, do you think it might ever come to the point that you might want to recite 1984 again?
Probably not, and I'll tell you why. Radio has gotten to the point, and it's true on this network, it's true on if you work at a local radio station, the segments that you have between commercials have been shortened considerably, and it's very hard. I found this to be true. When we started reading 1984, I had some wild idea that Air America was going to support it with ads from... Oh, I don't know, from online booksellers like Amazon.com or something. And Air America just, you know, they were busy picking boogers out of their nose or something and just kind of left me on my own. But what I found out in reading that entire novel on the air, it's difficult to sustain the tension when you have to do it in a little. I think we did it towards the end of each program at night. And a little 7-minute long bite, and then come back the next night and do it again and again and again.
Yeah, you know, there's another problem is that, you know, when you revive concepts like 1984 and also other things that have existed in the past, such as like that Twilight Zone episode that Oldman referred to one night, which is the monsters that landed on Maple Street.
Uh-huh.
And they were meant to be allegorical,
right?
And they have about 700% come to pass now.
That's right.
And it's reached the point that you can't get through it. It hurts too much.
That's right. That's right.
And,
it was painful to both Kathy and me to read, especially about the absolute destruction and the ending of a personal privacy that was manifest in 1984, and also the use of torture to get someone to believe something other than what his own eyes were telling him.
Right, absolutely. It's the complete rise of corporate personhood, the corporate citizen, which then trumps the right of the organic citizen to the point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
You know, basically, if you are born, if you are of the ground,
right,
you're finished. You're boned, you know.
That's right. You're bone dust.
Oh, the other thing was, this was something that Sam Cedar brought up on his show a couple of nights ago, and it's something that, like, I have thought this myself so many times, that the Republican candidates, they are literally trying to out-nut job each other. And
they really are, aren't they?
Exactly, man.
They're just crazy. They're just crazy. And wasn't Huckabee the one whose Southern Baptist son tried to board an airplane some time ago with a loaded Glock 9 in his carry-on luggage? And Huckabee, the governor, said, well, you know, he didn't look inside the suitcase before he got on board the plane. Like, yeah, everybody has loaded Glock 9s lying around the house inside a little overnight bag. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, right. And the thing is that if you're an extremist or even if you're related to someone, you literally do your business 2 foot above the bowl. And so nothing legally can touch you ever. Yeah, it's astonishing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's your word. You see, this is what you've done to me, man. Astonishing. That's your word, and I've copped it. Oh, dear.
Carl, do me a favor. Spread the word in Columbus. Let people know we're on the air there, okay?
Yeah, man. You got it. Come on it.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
All right. Be good.
Thanks, man. Take care. You got to love Carl. Time for another break? Pretty soon? Oh, God. It's difficult to take phone calls in talk radio anymore because your segments are so short. Oh, there it is! All right, Truth Seekers, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Don't you worry, baby, don't worry, because I'm right here at home.
This is our Giuliani song.
Because I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. Music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I get my love and on the run.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malore.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Jim is calling from Lombard, Illinois, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Mike. I just wanted to say something about these Christians. The thing I was thinking is that these Christians are confused. Is the reason they're confused is because Jesus was confused. And what I want to know about Jesus is, what kind of love sends a human being to eternal suffering? It's like the whole religious thing is some kind of nonsense. I can't figure out what they're talking about.
Well, the Christian faith is very weird and strange to people who aren't brought up with it, and I think even to people who are brought up with it, it is weird and strange. I've said before on this program, you know, I was brought up in Baptist and Methodist faith, Christian faith, until I came out of the ether and realized that it was nothing but nonsense, superstition nonsense. But, I don't know. What kind of religion condemns you to hell? Religion that has absolutely no faith in itself and has to tell you that if you don't believe what they're telling you to believe, then your so-called immortal soul is going to roast like a suckling pig through all of eternity. It's all craziness. What are you doing getting involved in anyway, Jim?
Well, the thing is, see, I got a problem with it because I was raised Catholic, and I still got a lot of that stuff in me, and it's like it's driving me nuts because I'm looking at it, but in my unconscious, it's still there. It's still there in my unconscious, and every once in a while it pops up again, like when I hear when I heard this thing about what happened in Colorado.
Yeah.
I says, what the hell? These people are nuts.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like what I hear you saying, Jim, is what you experience from your Catholicism is kind of like whack-a-mole. Keeps popping up, and you have to smack it down. I don't know what to tell you, pal. I don't know what to tell you, pal. I feel sorry for you, Jim. I really do. I think there are certain forms of Christianity, among them conservative Catholicism, conservative Protestantism, that if it gets you young enough, it can really leave you damaged if you decide you want to become rational and break away from it and live in the real world. Rather than live in some fantasy land full of spooks and talking snakes and people walking around on clouds and demons and devils and things that will suck your soul out. That's pretty much a good definition of madness, of paranoid schizophrenia, where you're absolutely convinced if you don't walk a certain way or avoid all the cracks on the sidewalk or don't piss off this big omnipotent a bone crusher who lives up in heaven, you're going to spend all of eternity, infinite time, being roasted like a pig. That's a working definition of total craziness. And anyone who's selling that is an absolute nutcase, as far as I'm concerned. And anyone who buys it is even worse. Good luck, Jim. You got to get your head back. You got to get your sense of consciousness and self back. And I hope you do it. I don't know how to tell you, but there's a huge industry out there called the therapy industry that works with people who get poisoned by religion. I feel sorry for you, Kathy. I got to tell you this. Kathy and I were at Callaway Gardens over the weekend down here in South Central Georgia. Beautiful place, massive place, big lodge, cabins, beautiful grounds with flowers. There's a butterfly house where you can walk in, this huge experimental chamber with just loaded with butterflies. It's just wonderful. And we took Molly down there specifically. There's five or six lakes on the property. We went down there specifically to go through the Christmas lights. The Callaway Gardens is known throughout the Southeast. They draw people from probably 10 states to come and see this. And it's about a 6 mile long trip, and you go through the woods and the forest, and there are, the music is piped in through the trees, and the lights are just incredible. Something like 6 or 7 or 8 million lights go to make this thing up. and you ride on a tram, and you know, open air tram, and it was just gorgeous. We had a wonderful time. Molly, about a mile from the end, Molly just kept leaning over and hugging her mother, and then hugging me. Just spontaneous hugs. She was just out of her mind from the lights and the music. She was just—I've never seen that kind of joy in a kid, just from driving around, looking at all the, you know, the fairies, the pixies, the elves, the butterfly, all in lights. The Santa's workshop, it was just amazing. I can't describe it to you, but suffice it to say that is just overwhelming, even to a jaded old bastard like me. It was just overwhelming. I was just like, wow, this is gorgeous. Well, on the property, they have a place now that's called a Christmas house, where you go in and you can buy Christmas ornaments and souvenirs. And apparently it's run by some fairly fundamental Christians. So I was in there, I bought some fudge. I was talking to the woman behind the counter, and I don't know how we got around to it, but I was making a joke. I said, you know, I've heard that when you talk to God, that's called prayer, and when God talks to you, it's called schizophrenia. And she looked at me as she handed me my fudge, and she said, well, I talk to him all the time.
Lord is empty.
And he talks to me.
Whiskey in my shaking hand.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know what's really going to freak people out, Kathy, is when we do our Christmas show. Because a lot of people who are not too familiar with my brand of craziness, you know, they hear me knocking religion constantly, which I do because I think it's all just absolute mental aberration stuff. And yet, on when we do our Christmas Eve, our Christmas program, which this year will be, what, 4 days before Christmas Eve, we bring Molly in, who's 3 and a half now, and we do the night before Christmas. And then I do a reading from the book of Luke, from the Christian end of the Bible, about the birth of Jesus. And, you know, every year when I do that, I get people who email and say, well, you know, if you're such an atheist, why do you do that? I also don't believe in some of the mythologies put out there by the Greeks, the Romans, the Norse, the stories of the Norse gods. I don't believe in the Hindu belief that we are... that existence is simply the dream state of, is it Shiva or Vishnu? And when the god wakes up, the earth ends with a shattering, cataclysmic collapse in and of itself. Boom! And then when Vishnu or Shiva, I forget which, goes back to sleep, creation starts again. I don't believe that either, but I find the stories fascinating, and some of them absolutely incredibly lovely. And I think the story of the biblical story in Luke, of the birth of Jesus Christ, is a nice story. I kind of like it. The fact of its being mythology is immaterial to the niceness of the story. Just like there are so many stories in Greek and Roman mythology that are nice, right? So our Christmas program is it's on a Friday this year.
Yeah, a week from Friday.
A week from this coming Friday. Wow.
I've been ruined, the Luke story, the tiny baby Jesus story, I've been ruined by the movie Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
Oh, yeah.
Where Will Ferrell is sitting at the... And I'm sorry, I can't help it. That movie cracked me up, maybe because I live in the South and I understand the whole NASCAR oeuvre. But where he's praying to the tiny baby little Jesus in his little golden fleece diapers. And
right.
It just cracked... It was... Some of the funny... I'm sorry.
Some people are awful sacrilegious. You know, that movie must have been made by the Jews in Hollywood, you know? It had to have been.
Oh, it's not any worse than anything Mel Brooks ever did, but that scene...
Well, he's Jewish, too.
Well, he can get away with it. That scene at the dining room table where they're all arguing about which Jesus they should pray to, and he's insisting they pray to the tiny baby, fleece diaper line baby Jesus, golden wings. It was just hilarious.
It was. It was a funny bit. But for people who don't understand the fearlessness of the atheism you hear on this program, you might be, I don't know, confused or put off or angered when you hear my reading of Luke, which is strictly by the book, and it's done very nicely. And with respect to the mythology, not to the respect to the religion, because I do not respect religion. I just can't and don't. Sorry, folks. If you're looking for a little bit of God talk with your talk radio, this is not the program for you. It really isn't. So, anyway, a week from Friday, the Christmas show. That'll be kind of interesting this year because we started having Molly on when she was 6 months old, and I think she just sat here and went, and then then she was a year and a half, then she was 2.5, and this year she's 3.5, so it should be interesting. I just hope she doesn't let loose with some cuss word or something, you know. Well, she lives with us. Well, you know, what do you expect? All right, back to your phone calls. I digress. John is calling from Oakland, California. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Mike.
Hey, John.
Can you spare about 5 minutes?
No.
On the phone here?
No, I can't do 5 minutes.
Okay, I've got a shorter one in.
If you got something that is under a minute... 5 minutes. I, you know, our breaks are 5 minutes. You know, what are you going to read, Beowulf?
No. It's just poem I wrote.
Okay. Some night we're going to do poetry night. But seriously, John, I can't do 5 minutes.
Okay, I've got a shorter one in. A little over a minute.
Over a minute? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. This is called The Numbers Game. It was written a couple years ago after a massacre that occurred in Cana, Lebanon. Images of the innocent float across my TV screen, bloodied, lifeless, wrapped in white, tiny human corpses bleeding from the ears, from the eyes, red blood staining, white robes, babes, helpless babies. Warm tears are released, running slowly down my cheeks. A voice places the massacre. Cana, Lebanon, a voice gives the number. 37 children, 37 babes murdered. A silent indictment against Israel, Hezbollah, against all those who could act but remain mute. 37 is just a number. My vision, cleansed of tears, sees around the world. There is a connection in tragedy. I see millions of living, breathing, weeping human beings joined by their tears. This is a reality, friend, as real as a newborn scream. A vision so clear, I see an Afghani woman kneeling in front of her TV, hot tears burn through her burqa. The German auto worker on break sees the images, wipes his eyes again and again. He must return to work. The aged Chinese woman watches, bewildered tears drop into her egg flour soup. The Iraqi youth watches, angry that he can't stop the tears, his fist clenched. We are all of us joined through our sorrow, our tears. And envision an Israeli family around the kitchen table, entranced by the TV, mother and father, heads hung in shame, next to a teenage daughter and a young son, 4 sets of tears. Tears as real as your heartbeat. They stain the table. But those stains are a blessing, a sign of humanity. And I ask you, friend, will the world ever be ruled by those of us who can still go to that place, the place where compassion is the reality? Or will it go to those who cannot cry tears, who have surrendered to their reptilian instincts? You see those lies in Cana as numbers, numbers that will be replaced tomorrow by more numbers, and next week by more numbers, numbers, nothing more than numbers.
All right. Well, that's that John, suggestion regarding the poem. This is in the form of not literary criticism, but language criticism. Okay, can you take that?
Sure.
Okay. Afghani refers to the money. The people who live there are called Afghans. Okay? All right, thanks, John. Okay. I appreciate you checking in. You have a nice evening.
That was literally your only comment?
Well, I'm not going to criticize somebody's art. I can't. I'm going to have to... No, I'm going to have to ban poetry unless we have a poetry night sometimes, because I think, I love poetry. You know that. You know that I love poetry. I used to go to the poetry slams. So we both would go to the poetry slams in Chicago every Sunday night. Loved it. I got up on stage a couple of times. Loved it. But it doesn't translate into talk radio. So with all due respect to everybody, and some of you are very talented, and some of you are excruciatingly boring. But the thing about poetry is, as far as I'm concerned, unless it's hip-hop poetry, unless it's something with real rhythm and I don't know how to explain it, but the jam kind of poetry, it just doesn't work, I don't think. When I like to do poetry, heavy poetry, is to be able to sit down and read it, to look at how it's put on the printed page, to see what the poet had in mind in terms of structure and flow and how the words either work with each other or work against each other. And you can't do that when you're doing it over radio. So, newsflash and bulletin for all the listeners to the Molloy program. Some of you are great poets, and I look forward to getting your books when they're published and so on and so forth. But unless we have a poetry night on the program, and this is no offense to John in Oakland. I've been meaning to say this for some time. I think John in Oakland and Bob the poet in Tennessee and some of the other ones are good, good poets. But it doesn't work on talk radio, folks. Okay? So... I respect your artistic creativity, and you respect my tacky little radio show. All right? Thank you. And remember, Afghani is the money. Afghan is the actual living, walking, breathing person. Okay? Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going? Hey,
it's going good. Let me put you on hold. I'll come right back because we got to do a break. We'll come back and talk with Jake. Oh, my goodness, are we almost out of time for the entire program? I thought we had another hour. I guess we don't. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
The third thing at Christmas got such a pain to me.
Hangovers. Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree. The fourth thing at Christmas got such a pain to me.
Sending Christmas cards.
Hangovers. Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me. 5 months of bills.
Sending Christmas cards.
Hangovers. Rigging up the lights.
And finding a Christmas tree. The sixth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me.
Facing my in-laws.
5 months of bills.
Ten before the hour. Skywatcher writes in, Dear Mike, love you to death, but I must say I found it a bit ironic that you were jumping on the call Led Zeppelin. You call Led Zeppelin a bunch of old washed-up has-been ridiculous old fogies. Aren't you all about the same age? Thank God that they, like you, decided screw it on the put me out to pasture and just let me rock on my chair on the front porch school of aging. Mike, you yourself have the voice, audacity, energy, and enthusiasm of a teenager. If I didn't know approximately how old you are, I would think you're in your 20s. Let's hope the Zep will bring the same kind of preternatural youthfulness to their reunion tour that you do to your radio gig every day. Hell, for all I know, y'all and Eric Clapton and Stevie Winwood have made an immortality pact with the devil. I trust they can still wreak plaint-bistering sonic heavy metal havoc on the world like you can still wreak your brand of revolutionary and evolutionary sonic and psychic political and existential terrorism on the planet. Rock on, a Skywatcher. My point was not... Look, I appreciate old rock and rollers. When I see people in their early 60s doing Stairway to Heaven, You know, just on stage in front of thousands of screaming, frothing fans who, when that record first came out, weren't even born yet. I think it's wonderful. I really do. My point was the reunion tour made it to the fifth story on NBC Nightly News. Now, that shouldn't have happened. But anyway, sure. I appreciate anything that Paige and Plant can still do outside of a wheelchair. I think it's wonderful. I really do. All of them, all those old rockers. There's no way. You know, as that generation dies off, say goodbye to rock music, except in the archives. I'm serious. Rock and roll will never die. Only held as long as the people who invented it and perfected it and evolutionized it a bit were still alive. And, you know, one by one, just like the greatest generation, World War II generation is dying off, so too, eventually, will my precious rock and roll generation. But I hear what you're saying, Skywatcher. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls from our flagship station, KPHX, in Phoenix. Billy Foster, our technical director, who floats around someplace between here and there, taking care of things. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And again, a welcome to Columbus, Ohio, WVKO, 1580 AM, the newest affiliate in the Nova M family. Now, a lot of people are going to listen to the programming on that station and say, well, it's another Air America station. How did Malloy? They must have hired Malloy back. I will go back to Air America when they're giving drinks of ice water in hell. The bitterness I feel towards that network is so pronounced. But there are several programs on the station in Columbus that are not Air America. There are several that are. But anyway, we thank the station for picking this particular program up. Robin is calling from Los Angeles, listening on the internet. Hey, Robin. Oh, wait a second. Robin, let me put you on hold.
Okay, Mike.
I'll put you on hold because I got to go back to Jake, who I was talking. I'm sorry, Jake. Where were we?
Hey, Mike, how's it going? I was calling to bring up the issue of why church and state should be separate. And okay. I think Mike Huckabee is a perfect example why. You know, this knuckle-dragging Neanderthal is possibly going to win Iowa, maybe even the Republican nomination.
I think he's got the nomination.
Yeah, I think so, too, because these Republicans are so bigoted, so narrow-minded, they want to put a guy in office who thinks that people with HIV and AIDS should be isolated. Well, you know, if anybody's to be quarantined in the society, I think it should be the Republican candidates for the presidency. You know, maybe they can all be quarantined over it. Mitt Romney's Mormon mansion, they could all discuss each other's holy underwear or, you know, Joseph Smith's golden tablets or whatever religious nonsense these people believe in.
You sound a little agitated tonight.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sick of these Republicans using religion as a weapon.
I hear you. No, I'm just kidding. Jake, it turns my stomach. I'm so sick of it. When I watch Mitt Romney the other day, when I hear Huckabee, you know, I just think to myself, how do we get to this point? Romney's little speech about his Mormonism was no more a Jack Kennedy moment than there was no more truth to it than Jack Kennedy winning in 1960. Jack Kennedy didn't. Richard Nixon won. But, you see, boat theft back in the 60s was less sophisticated than it is in the new century, but I think it's pretty much understood that Illinois' electoral votes were stolen by the daily political machine so that Kennedy would get the office. But Kennedy at least had the courage to stand up there and talk about inclusiveness. What Romney was talking about, he was trying to convince people like Huckabee that he, Romney, was acceptable as a Mormon to the Christian evangelical crowd. Meantime, the rest of us are out here wondering, who the hell is he talking to? So I agree with you, man. I wish they would keep religion, so to speak, the hell out of politics, but that'll never happen, Jake.
Right, and this will be the downfall of the Republican Party in this next election. The fact that you got, you know, Southern Baptist fundamentalists like Huckabee more interested in arguing with Mormons like Romney or, you you know, Catholics or whoever, you know, whatever little sectarian squabble these Republicans are going to get into, they're going to miss the big picture of what the voters actually care about. And, you know, the Republicans might as well just, you know, fold up the tent and go away because they're going to lose.
Well, I hope that's the case. I really do. Jake, thanks. I appreciate it, man. Take care. And Robin and Tony, we don't have time to get you called tonight, but if you call in tomorrow, I'll bump you up to the head of the line, which means you only have to stay on hold for 2 hours instead of three. No, just kidding. Just kidding. So what do you think will be the horror story tomorrow? Huh? What do you think is going to surface tomorrow? What kind of floater is going to come bubbling to the surface tomorrow, exuding little gas bubbles? So we'll talk about it tomorrow, huh? Keep your fingers crossed, truth seekers.
Probably that Dana Perino has no idea what was going on 9/11 and why it was such
a big deal. That's true.
She panicked when she was asked a question about it.
Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.